Hi, and welcome to the magazine Racco and Chris. I'm Ron Pariser. Today I'll be reading from the March-April issue of Yankee. The first article is written by Mel Allen and titled, The Talk of Every Town. On Thanksgiving Day, five friends and I gathered for a traditional meal. We met in one couple's townhouse that we all agreed was a rental find in our southern New Hampshire town. Just steps from Main Street, it featured a porch, a stylish interior, and across the street a pretty library and a waterfall tumbling into the river. For much of our time, we talked about houses, where we might live one day if we uprooted ourselves, and how impossible it has become to find what most of us would call affordable. We remembered our own first houses, and how a $50,000 mortgage once felt as though we had suddenly taken on the weight of the world. And we asked how today's younger generation could even hope to own their own place one day. Our conversation, I am certain, mirrored many others across the country. I know we face big existential problems. Climate change, the fate of our democracy, what an AI future may hold. But what I hear people talk about the most lies closer to the surface. Where can they or their children call home when it seems out of reach for so many? But the dream is still there. We love to travel. We love sitting at a cafe or strolling around a harbor or walking through a historic neighborhood. And even as visitors, we long to stick around. From our Best Places to Live feature, we summon that dream. We've gathered up favorite places we think you'd want to know, too. Maybe you'll live in one of them someday, maybe not. But the search often brings rewards of its own. Also in this issue, we invite you to step inside an extraordinary project at the University of Maine. The ingenuity of its engineers has led to the promise of thousands of efficient, affordable, 3D-printed homes, each constructed from local wood waste. The project provides a glimpse into a time when we embrace living in a new way, using technology our forebears could never have imagined. And in The Hardwick Blueprint, we visit a small town in northern Vermont that's imbued with a spirit of community and cooperation and looking out for one another. You will come away from this story knowing that what makes any place truly special is the connections we make with those around us. Maybe one day our children will delight in living in a cozy, affordable house that took shape as if by magic in a giant lab. And when they gather with friends, they will reflect on when they feared they would never know true roots or truly belong to a place. Now look at us, they will say. Mel Allen. The next article is by Susie Spikall, and titled Ode to Mud Season, Learning to Love the Squish of Early Spring. Illustrations by Tara Anand. I'm an outlier, an admitted rebel. I stand up for things in nature that most people find gross, alarming, or just plain ugly. A short list of animals I love includes carrion-eating turkey vultures, any type of slug, and short-tailed shrews, the only venomous mammal in North America. It isn't just animals either. I'd rather bend down to admire a carnivorous pitcher plant than stop to sniff a rose. When it comes to seasons, don't expect anything different from me. I'm the one, perhaps the only one, ready to raise my glass and cheer that soft, squishy time of year in New England known as mud season. As winter fades and the temperatures rise, snow melts. Below the melting snow, the deep layers of the ground remain frozen. Combined with early spring rains, a slurry of mud rules the land, making an ordinary walk on a back road a boot-sucking slog. This isn't a quick season either. It has tenacious staying power, starting and stalling in late February and ending in May when the ground has thoroughly thawed. Mud season is a dirty, sloppy, soggy, ugly time of year that makes many New Englanders want to abandon their quaint villages and move somewhere normal, without so much mud. I say to them, don't go. Instead, grab your best muck boots and sink into this mire with me. See it for what it is, a season full of hope, and winter, when winter yields to spring, and the world becomes soft and sweet again. I know mud season has arrived before any brown slush graces the landscape. It starts on the first warm days of February, when the sun feels surprisingly warm, almost tropical. After being frozen for so long, the air smells awake with pine and spice. That's when I see them, tiny dark bluish-gray springtails that fill my snowshoe tracks like sprinkled pepper. Springtails, also known as snow fleas, are ancient petite invertebrates that use their furcula, a forked appendage, on the underside of their abdomen to fling themselves forward like corn popping. They gather in my snowy prints, a riot of little bodies searching for mates. I am down on my hands and knees, a witness to this first signpost of my favorite season. If they weren't so tiny, I would kiss them. Right around the return of the springtails, the softening ground ushers in the sweetest time of the year, sugaring time. There wouldn't be maple syrup without the mud-producing freezing and thawing that maple trees need to get their sweet sap flowing. Cold nights in the 20s are followed by warm days in the 40s, loosening winter's grasp. The sap flows and the mud oozes. Every year, my sweetheart and I gather with friends at his sugar shack, and we talk winter away with our cups filled with hot syrup and whiskey and our faces ruddy with steam. Outside, we grill while our dogs run dirty through the melting snow. I wouldn't trade these days of sugaring for a trip to the beach. Give me mud if it means there is a sugar shack filled with syrup and friends at the end of the day. But the thing I love most about mud season is how moist and juicy it is. It is sensual. The frozen earth unbuttons and yields, spreading nutrients back to the plants. So ribbons of grass, threaded with wildflowers, can carpet the meadows. It is a time of courtship. You can hear it day and night throughout the season. Barred owl pairs hoot. Who cooks for you? Who cooks for you all? From bare trees during the deep nights of March. And okery rings from the cattail marsh as male red-winged blackbirds return to their breeding grounds. Skunks scent the air with romance, and bald eagles grasp each other's talons as they spin and tumble to the ground in a free, falling embrace. At dawn and dusk, courting red foxes light up the browning meadows with flashes of red. Morning cloak butterflies dip along roadside mud puddles, fluttering down with curly tongues out to lap up the rich muck. It is the glimpse of these velvet brown butterflies, trimmed in cream with electric blue spots, that stops me in my tracks. There it is, a butterfly, loving the mud as much as me. It might not be pretty, and it is definitely messy, but mud season is primordial. It is the soup of life for New England. Without the melt and the ooze, the slosh and squash, spring would be too easy for us. We need mud season. It is our sugar season, when the sweetness of what is to come entices us. It is the tiny chirp of a spring peeper calling from the scrappy brown ground that reminds us that just around the muddy corner, the world still turns. Love is in the air, and life continues. The next article is titled Baby Love. Listening to spring's siren song at Hancock Shaker Village, peeps, squeals, and bleats from barnyard newborns, by Justin Shatwell, photos by Megan Haley. The lamb certainly isn't shy. On knobby knees, it takes its star turn in the middle of a circle of children. Giggling, they dart their hands closer and closer until they summon the courage to pat the creature on its head. The lamb responds with happy bleats and exploratory nibbles on the children's shorts. A few feet away, a group of parents, smiling, but clearly under-caffeinated, watch over their flock. When one of the children inevitably asks, "Can we get a pet sheep?" it's answered with a heavy sigh. While lambs and children instinctively embrace spring, we, who've seen a few, need a little more coaxing. As our children run barefoot through the grass, we're still pulling on wool socks out of habit and wondering if we can push off the first mow another weekend. But since 2002, the unambiguously named Baby Animals Festival at Massachusetts's Hancock Shaker Village has provided just the jolt some of us need. A chance to get up close with the museum's newborn animals. It's a simple idea, but effective. This festival is to spring what a polar bear plunge is to winter. It's a full-body immersion into everything green and young and new. An older man approaches the crowd. "I'm Bill Mangiardi, and I'm the farm director of this beautiful place," he says, and then starts herding people onto a hay wagon. It's an hour before the museum opens, and he's giving a behind-the-scenes tour to 24 guests, something he'll do every day of the festival. The lamb, adopted by Mangiardi after being rejected by its mother, trots close behind him as the last guest climbs into the wagon. "Come on, this little one needs a bottle," he shouts. Hancock Shaker Village is both a museum and the oldest working farm in the Berkshires. The wagon rolls peacefully by the green buds peeking up in a CSA garden. Donkeys bray from their pen. A mother cow stands protectively over a calf born just yesterday. Beyond the farm stands a line of Shaker dormitories and workhouses, each beautiful in its plainness. The Shakers were utopians who sought to make heaven on earth, which to them meant order, peace, and simplicity. Their minimalist aesthetic is still enchanting to anyone who sees the divine in a right angle and a well-swept floor. At the heart of the village stands a massive circular stone barn. Inside, mother goats, sheep, and cows rest in pens with their newborns. A particularly vocal ewe greets the tour with a full-throated baa. Immediately, Mangiardi encourages children to clamber into the pens. He teases and jokes with them, paying special attention to the shy ones. With a "here you go," he surprises one boy by shoving a baby goat into his arms. And in an instant, the younger transforms from timid to beaming. Mangiardi ends the tour by placing a chick on each of the guests' heads. It's a silly moment that lets the kids laugh at their parents and lets the parents laugh at themselves. Outside the barn, the museum's gates open, and an unbroken column of families begin marching across the grounds. Soon, a small parking lot of baby strollers appears along the barn's curved walls. Mangiardi points to it and grins. "That's my favorite sight," he says. Inside, the barn is alive with sound. Everywhere, parents are lowering children into pens, letting new life meet new life. Above, dozens of birds nesting in the rafters add their song to the chorus of laughs, moos, cheers, and baas. It's a peaceful chaos, almost pagan in its freedom. The straight-laced Shakers probably would have disapproved of all this clamor. It wasn't quite their idea of heaven, but it's heaven nonetheless. This year's Baby Animals Festival at Hancock Shaker Village will be held April 13th through May 5th. For more information, go to hancockshakervillage.org. The next article is written by Meg Lukens Noonan. Photos by Emily Elizabeth, Photography. And it's titled Flower Power. The Hafsa Lewis touch can be seen everywhere on Nantucket. She wants others to bring the beauty home. There's a saying, all flowers must grow through dirt. Floral designer Hafsa Lewis tells me over lunch on a sparkling late spring Nantucket day. The first time I heard it, it just slapped me in the face. It's easy to see why that expression hit home when you learn how Lewis found her way to floristry and to a rebirth of sorts on this Massachusetts island. A series of traumatizing experiences beginning about a decade ago had left her reeling. First, she was near the Boston Marathon finish line in 2013 when the bombs went off, and she went to the aid of a gravely injured woman. 2 years later, she lost her savings in a Ponzi scheme, and then in 2017, her husband abruptly left her. Devastated, she quit her job at a Boston hospital, abandoned her plan to become a mental health counselor. She holds a master's degree in clinical psychology, and moved to Nantucket to take a bartending gig. It was a dark, dark time in my life. I lost 30 pounds. I had no confidence, she says. The only time I didn't feel like I wanted to die was when I was surfing or playing with flowers. Lewis had enjoyed dabbling in floristry as a freelancer for an event planner. But now flowers felt like her salvation, a way to lose herself in beauty when things felt so bleak. They also presented a path forward. In 2018, she launched Hafsa and Company as a floral marketing company specializing in the kind of large-scale, fresh, and faux installations that businesses increasingly use to beautify their spaces, attract customers, and generate social media hits. After attending workshops in her native England, as well as in Ecuador and Mexico, to learn the mechanics of the displays, hint, it's all about chicken wire and zip ties, she started building her portfolio. Among Hafsa and Company's most enthusiastic clients is Lemon Press, the airy organic cafe where we've met for lunch. It's owned by cousins Daria Afshari Galt and Rachel Afshari, who happen to share Lewis's Persian heritage and her belief in the magic of flowers. Our first install with Hafsa was a small piece over the coffee bar, says Galt. It was so well received, people would come in to Instagram it. We said, wow, let's keep going. Now, the Hafsa and Company touches everywhere at the cafe. An ethereal 16-foot swag of preserved white blooms, hanging amaranthus, lunaria, helico fern, and others graces a brick wall in the dining area. A canopy of faux wisteria dangles over the bar, and a border of foraged grapevines and silk daffodils and forsythias frame the eatery's exterior doorway. Lewis would soon be shifting that seasonal entrance display to summery spray roses and ranunculus. Lewis has also flowered the Artists Association of Nantucket Gallery, the Nantucket Hotel, the Nantucket Dreamland Movie Theater, and a host of boutiques both on and off the island. She's done displays for annual events, including the Nantucket Wine and Food Festival, the Christmas Stroll, and the Daffodil Festival, made custom pieces for private parties, floral crowns, anyone, and presented workshops for aspiring florists. In 2021, the noted Los Angeles-based fine art photographer Gray Malin enlisted Lewis to create elaborate floral props for a series of vignettes he'd come to the island to shoot. That same year, and again in 2022, the local Coast Guard station asked her to put her creative touch on the iconic seasonal wreaths, daffodils in spring, poinsettias at Christmas time, that it hangs on the Brant Point Lighthouse. Lewis wasn't involved with the 2023 daffodil wreath, which was delayed by lighthouse renovations and then made and hung at the last minute by the Coast Guard when repairs were complete. Like most small business owners, she's faced challenges. When COVID hit, she stayed afloat by making and delivering $50 bouquets with inspirational messages to residents who were stuck at home. Then in 2022, Nantucket's Sign Advisory Council questioned whether her temporary outdoor installations were technically signs and therefore subject to a permitting process. a red tape-heavy requirement that likely would have sunk her business. Some detractors also sniffed that her displays were not appropriate on Nantucket. Lewis went to every council meeting for 6 weeks to argue that her pieces were not signs, and that they were no different from the flower boxes most shops maintain. I also wanted them to know the reason they were seeing more installations is because our community wants them. They make people happy. The controversy ended when the town unexpectedly ordered the council to disband before it made any recommendations. "And I'm still here to flower another day," she says, smiling broadly. Through it all, Lewis has remained mindful of what drew her to flowers: their power to heal, to express joy and sorrow, and to forge connections. "The science part of my brain," she says, "is really interested in how therapeutic flowers can be. So interested, in fact, that she's starting a doctorate program in clinical psychology this year with the idea of one day using flowers in a counseling practice. We have art therapy and pet therapy," she says. "Why not flower therapy?" There's a bit more to the tale of how Hafsa Lewis blossomed on Nantucket. Those coasties she helped with the lighthouse wreaths, last summer she married one of them. "It was such a meet cute," she says. "My friends tell me my life should be a Hallmark movie." HAFSAANDCO.com. Do-it-yourself floral design. Granted, you're probably not planning to erect an elaborate floral installation in your home, but Hafsa Lewis says the principles behind her big stuff apply to the simplest arrangements, too. Picking your flowers. "Go with the ones that make you feel something," she says, "whether it's a $24 stem or a sad-looking Charlie Brown-type grocery store flower. If you're moved enough by something that nature's created and it sparks joy inside of you, then you should take it home and make it your own." Choosing your vessel. Pick one that allows your flowers space to breathe. If they're stuck in a vase that just stands them straight up, they can feel stiff. That's not how they are in nature. They grow loose and wild and free. Let each flower have its moment. It doesn't matter if it's the side or the back or the front of the stem. Flowers are beautiful from all angles. Setting up for success. First, make sure your vessel is clean. Remove any leaves from the stem that would be under the waterline, since submerged leaves can cause bacteria that will shorten the flower's shell life. Give the stems a fresh cut before you put them in water. Taking your time. I often walk away from a piece for a while so that I can come back to it with fresh eyes, and I take pictures in order to get a different perspective. That helps me see what's missing and what I think I could do differently. I think that works for both large and small-scale things. Honing your skills. Lewis recommends photographing one arrangement you do now and one you do in 6 months, then studying the pictures to see what you've done differently and what has stuck with you. Did the shape change? Did you pick different colors? Once you start to pay more attention, you learn what you like and what is most meaningful to you. To round out this issue, I'll read a few spring flings, compiled by Bill Scheller. Longer, warmer days give even more reasons to explore these colorful, feel-good events and seasonal attractions. Connecticut, Cherry Blossom Celebration. New Haven. Back in 1973, New Haven's Parks Department planted 72 Japanese flowering cherry trees in Worcester Square Park. The tree's bounty of pale pink blossoms emerges over the course of 2 weeks in April, an abundance marked by the historic Worcester Square Association's annual community event featuring music and food vendors. 414, historicworcestersquare.org. Color Blends, House and Spring Garden, Bridgeport. A 1903 Colonial Revival mansion in the city's historic Stratfield District is the backdrop for a half-acre garden featuring nearly 100,000 bulbs. Tulips, daffodils, crocuses, narcissus, and many more spring flowering favorites. The garden, created by Dutch floral landscaper Jacqueline van der Kloer, was designed to inspire home gardeners who are invited to stroll the property and tour the house and art gallery when blooms appear in early April. Check website for details. ColorBlendsSpringGarden.com. Denison Home Daffodil Day. Mystic. Mystic's 1654 Denison Homestead hosts this celebration of the surrounding nature center's thousands of daffodils. Look for tours of the 1717 Pequot Sipos Manor and its gardens, demonstrations of open hearth cooking, and children's activities, including crafts and a scavenger hunt. Check website for details, denisonhomestead.org. Flamig Farm, Simsbury. April marks a new season at the family-owned Flamig Farm and its petting zoo, where kids can meet critters ranging from the familiar, horses, cows, sheep, etc., to exotics such as peacocks and emus. On weekends, the farm's ponies are saddled up for rides. Want to linger? Reserve a couple of nights at Flamig's Airnub accommodations and join in the life of the farm. Weather permitting, reopening 4/1. FlamigFarm.com. Greenfield Hill Dogwood Festival, Fairfield. The gorgeous dogwood blossoms gracing the grounds of Greenfield Hill Congregational Church have inspired a spring festival since 1936. Highlights include live music, craft vendors, baked goods, plant sales, a history walking tour, and of course, the festival's inspiration, once described by Eleanor Roosevelt after a 1938 visit as an avenue of pink and white dogwood such as I have never seen anywhere else in this country. May 11 to 12, greenfieldhillchurch.com. May Market at Hillstead Museum, Farmington. During the rest of the year, the main attraction at Hillstead is its renowned collection of Impressionist paintings. But in springtime, art competes with the museum's 152 acres of flowers, blossoming shrubs, and natural woodlands. May Market, held on the first weekend of the month, is the perfect time to enjoy the grounds and browse the offerings of more than 40 vendors, plus Mother's Day plants and cut flowers. Dates May 4th and 5th. Hillstead.org. That's it for the March-April edition of Yankee Magazine. I'm Chris Radio Volunteer Ron Pariser. So long until next time.